Welcome into your Friday edition of Morning Invest. Coming up on today's show, we're going to have a big Ukrainian roundup. I'm going to be the sheriff of the Ukrainian roundup. We're going to go on down to the Ukrainian roundup because there's a lot going on, right? President Biden flying to Poland today. We're figuring out how to get rid of foreign oil from Russia. More aircraft and weapons being sent to Ukraine. A whole lot of stuff to talk about in the war zone this morning.
Plus, Donald Trump has filed a lawsuit against Hillary Clinton for her role in what he says is defaming him over control and contact with the Russians. This is a really interesting story. The mainstream media would have you laugh it off, like, what a dope. This is just a ploy for campaigning. I don't necessarily think that's the case, and I want to discuss it and think about what we could learn from it as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with this story. And we're also going to look at Vladimir Putin separately, because did he manage to pull the wool over just about every world leader's eyes as it relates to his currency and the ruble? Really interesting take on Vladimir Putin's strategy as it relates to his monetary policy, getting the world now to pay for oil using rubles. We'll tell you about that and more as Morning Invest starts on your Friday morning.
Welcome to your Friday show. This is the end of a very long week. Remember that you can get a heads up of what we're going to talk about in the show if you please subscribe to our morning newsletter. It's morninginvest.com.
That's right. Morninginvest.com. It's totally free. Delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning. It looks like this. Just put in your email address, sign up, and we put a lot of hard work into the newsletter so you can be more informed first thing in the morning. And one of the big stories that we covered in the newsletter, we're going to extrapolate on it here, is what's going on in Ukraine and the president meeting with European Union leaders yesterday and coming to an agreement. He spoke just a few minutes ago on his way to Poland, where he's expected to see the refugee crisis firsthand. 2 million people have now poured across the borders into Poland. Though the big oil meeting, that the big oil deal yesterday probably is the big headline out of all of this. We're going to move away from Russian oil. European leaders are being sort of forced into this plan by the United States. Like, hey, move away from Russian oil. Instead of getting this virtually on the same continent, now you're going to ship it from the United States.
Right. And so why did the European Union need the United States to tell it how to not use Russian oil, right? So this seemed to be, before the president of the United States flew into Europe, it seemed that there were some countries saying, well, we don't even really care about staying in NATO. We don't want this war. We need to continue to make sure that our country can run. And others saying, yeah, okay, we'll get involved in this conflict. It's been very disparate. But once we get the sort of photo ops, they all line up and say, yes, we are all against what Russia is doing. We all need to talk about how to remove dependency on Russian oil. And the United States is here to tell us exactly how. Now, why they needed the United States to figure that out is a mystery. But in the press release, the White House says that its role in figuring out how Europe doesn't use Russian oil is to maintain its regulatory environment with an emphasis on supporting this emergency energy security objective. So the U.S. will then track who Europe does get oil from and act in sort of, you know, in a trade way, like yes to this, no to this. This gives the United States a lot more power over the European Union, which the European Union is not usually want to hand over to the United States. It's an interesting power grab.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to unpack what all of this is going to look like because, you know, the United States is trying to... Europe's not ready for this at all. I mean, and they don't have, they're broadcasting this to Vladimir Putin saying, well, we're going to move off of this by 2024, 2025, in large part, but they're not ready for it. And it's going to put an undue burden on Europeans,
right,
of course, in these additional sanctions that they announce. The president flying to Poland this morning, going to be there to see, to offer more support to the Ukrainian people, but to also look at the refugee crisis firsthand. We were first to report this yesterday here on the show, and then it was later confirmed in the afternoon that President Biden is announcing that, hey, come on over to America. We're going to take 100,000 Ukrainians. refugees, come on into the United States right now. We're going to set up shop, make sure that you have everything that you need. We called out the hypocrisy on this yesterday, of course.
Right.
As you know, Yemen, Afghanistan, Syria, the list goes on and on. But when he's in Poland, he's going to be met with questions from Vladimir Zelensky, who just last night asked NATO, hey, we know you got a lot of tanks. We know you have a lot of aircraft. We know you have a lot of missiles. Why don't you just send 1% of all of your tanks and aircraft to me? Vladimir Zelensky asking this. You can give us 1% of all your planes, 1% of all of your tanks, 1%. We cannot buy it, but just give them to us. These supplies depend on NATO's political decisions, Zelensky told NATO.
That's like, you know, when you need to buy a car and you drive by those double-decker delivery trucks and you're like, there's so many cars. Why can't I just have one of those? Like one out of 30. I need a new car.
Right.
I'll just take one of those. Right. It's that kind of attitude. Like, you guys got a lot. Just give them over. I'm a popular dude.
And by the way, he's absolutely right. You know, we absolutely do have all we have as many weapons as we can possibly handle and more. So why don't we give them to the, you know, why don't we just hand them over to him? Because we already are anyway. You know, we already are giving him weapons. These aircraft overnight, it's reported these MiGs, these jet aircraft that were not supposed to be handled and given to the Ukrainian people, not given to the Ukrainian military, because that would lead to World War III. Remember President Biden warning us about this? Like, if you give them tanks, you give them aircraft, that's World War III. Don't kid a kidder.
Right. But then Zelensky, the article that you just pulled up said that the United States and NATO have not actually given, they have given multiple rocket launch systems, anti-warship, but not actual defense planes. If you scroll just in that
Poland,
paragraph.
But see, what they're doing is, as the Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning, we're basically taking these aircraft, these jets, parking them in Poland, and we're like, I might just leave the keys here. If anyone wants to come and grab these, I don't know. That's basically how the Wall Street Journal framed it. Like, we're parking all of these jets here. Here are the keys. We're going to the movies.
Right.
If we come back and these jets aren't here, I don't know.
Yes.
That's what we're doing basically with these aircraft right now.
Well, now the press release and out of the European Union and the United States do say that they are going to think about reducing dependence on natural gas. Anyway, you know, from now on, that is going to. So what are they going to do? Well, I mean, really, their plan is to sanction more private investment and private innovation in renewables. So it's like, okay, but you could have been doing that all along. You know, as the leader, it says, in renewable energy, the United States and the European Union, already we lead this, but we're going to continue to deploy recommendations. So that's good. Recommendations to reduce overall gas demand. It didn't seem like a really, you know, like, hey, we just have to stop all single-use plastic right now, because nothing like that. No, like, you know, we must change our lifestyle at all.
According to a document that was obtained by CNN, Ukraine has also asked for an additional 500 per day Javelin and Stinger missile usage. They want to be able to use 500 of them per day. They've already been pouring in thousands of Stinger missiles, thousands of Javelin missiles, which, of course, has been an absolute boon for these companies, right? Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, all of them, which are providing these missiles. According to a CNN report on March 7th, U.S. and its allies had already sent 17,000 anti-tank missiles, 2,000 anti-aircraft missiles, and a whole new weapons package that was just approved.
Does Russia even have that many tanks?
Doesn't matter. They just need them, man. Don't ask questions. Don't
ask questions. Presumably.
They've got a lot of tanks. But again, you want to fight a proxy war. This is a boon for the military-industrial complex. Just send as many freaking things as you possibly can. They're sending weapons via land, border crossings in Eastern Europe. They're not even, they say they're not sending warplanes. But of course, like I just said, they're just dropping them basically in Poland for usage in this area. And it's, I just don't get how 2 weeks ago you have President Biden saying, this is World War III if you do this.
Yes.
This is.
Well, I think it was one of those situations where he said the quiet part out loud, because they don't actually want you to think that. They just want sort of, I mean, so I clipped a few headlines this morning, and the it just feels to me like the narrative of the mainstream media is Russia's losing here anyway. What we're doing is working. Ukraine is absolutely victorious in this. Do you see these clips called? No.
What do you want to
give me just 1 second to find these kind of things. So not that one. Try that one right next to this one in the top right.
This one.
Top right. Okay. Yes. So if you just look at these headlines as if Ukraine is doing all of these really heroic things, right? And I think it's just for us to not really know for sure any of these narratives. Last night I was at my book club and we were talking about the conflict and a friend of mine, as they were talking, one woman was like, well, they just need to go in and assassinate, you know, Putin and the West can just do it. That was sort of one opinion. And another one was like, I said, you know, I was mentioning this book that I'm reading because it was a book club about how this is how they tell me the world ends, about cyber espionage and the way that, you know, the way that the governments fight now is not really things that we see. And if we think that we understand the narrative based on the media that we can see, we're being incredibly ignorant. And I was like, I don't think we know the full story. And a friend of mine's like, well, I think we know, but Russians don't know. I'm like, but isn't that kind of one-sided of us to think that we are the only ones to know the truth, but the opposing side, the enemy side, doesn't? I just feel like that is a really dangerous way to conceive of this war. But again, these news articles that I clipped, like Ukraine is doing this thing in order to appropriately identify Russian soldiers. How does Ukraine have this technology when Ukraine has been suffering at the hands of Russian hackers?
That was my thought when I saw this headline in this story. I'm like, so they have the infrastructure to go be using like facial recognition, bio scanning technology right now. They're just like, they like buildings are destroyed.
As long as the person was not injured at all in the
right
how they died.
Yes. You know, I mean,
and they know how to connect to that person's family. They can reach into a database of people and find
in
your
Russia?
Mom.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, okay, that's interesting when you think about how much Ukraine has suffered at the hands of Russian hackers over the last decade, right? But that goes two ways. That was an interesting one.
Are they trying to get people on board with like how humanitarian they are? Like, we care so much that we're going out here and taking the time to identify and let people know. Are they like saying, oh, the Iranians are so nice in war? Is that what they're trying to paint this as?
I don't know. I think here's another one. Look, this is something that's supposed to tell us that people in Russia are against the war. They're not doing good. They don't get the true information. So Russians are panic buying antidepressants and sleeping pills. Okay. Are they? So here's my related question, because I think those things sound like a lot of fun in this day and age. So are they doing it more than the rest of us? Interesting.
More sleeping pills, more antidepressants. And by the way, Reuters, you know, again, we know the history there, right? Propaganda machine. And so look, you know, and here's
prominent Russians quitting jobs, refusing to support war. Okay. Is that, and I'm not saying that any one of these things is not true or not relevant, but is it relevant in the grand scheme of things? Are Ukrainians buying more sleeping pills and anti-anxiety pills? I would say probably, right? So what is it that we're seeing and what is it that we're not seeing? And can we sort of avoid this idea that we get the truth, the enemy doesn't?
All of these articles, by the way, Reuters, Associated Press, you know, here's another Reuters piece, exclusive, up
right,
to
60% okay,
failure rate for some Russian missiles in Ukraine, U.S. officials say.
But this is so interesting, right? So when we look back to the book that we just read called This Is How They Tell Me the War Ends, I think I have a clip of it here. When you think about the failure rate in general of weapons, yes, that's it. I'm sorry, that's a terrible screenshot. So I can just read it to you if you'd like. A study between 1950 and 1968 found that at least 1,200 nuclear weapons had been involved in significant accidents. The point she's trying to make here is that the technology around these weapons is very unreliable. They malfunction a lot. This is something we talked about yesterday, how only 1.38% of nuclear core fissioned in the first nuclear weapon dropped on Hiroshima. So you know, when we see a story like this, up to 60% failure rate for Ukrainian missiles, the question I have is, isn't that pretty standard? Because it seems to me that it is.
Yeah. I mean, we know that that's the case with Patriot missiles. You know, in Iraq, we knew that the United States had a pretty high failure rate with Patriot missiles.
Yes.
I mean, look,
so
that's
then
the
this
thing with
story
Scud missiles,
is Scud showing missiles. Us that Russia's failing. They're not doing a good job. This war that may or may not be the case, right? But if 60% is sort of a normal failure rate of this kind of technology, and we know that it's incredibly volatile, then that's a leading headline, right?
Right. Well, here's another leading headline, which has to do with Biden warning of real food shortages. So President Biden came out yesterday and said, you know, what we're doing here, it's important. Again, we're sticking it to Putin. Remember, this is a Putin price spike in oil and all of the money, the additional money that you're paying right now for food and otherwise. It's because of Putin. And you're going to have to pay. And you're going to have to deal with real food shortages, because now that's the next level here. You're already paying a lot for gas. You're already paying a lot for housing prices. You're paying a lot for food across the board. Now there's just not enough food because of what we have to deal with President, with Vladimir Putin.
With regard to food shortages, yes, we did talk about food shortages. And it's going to be real. The price of these sanctions is not just imposed upon Russia. It's imposed upon an awful lot of countries as well, including European countries and our country as well. And because both Russia and Ukraine have been the breadbasket of Europe in terms of wheat, for example, just to give you one example. But we had a long discussion in the G7 with both the United States, which has a third largest producer of wheat in the world, as well as Canada, which is also a major, major producer. And we both talked about how we could increase and disseminate more rapidly food shortages. In addition to that, we talked about urging all the European countries and everyone else to end trade restrictions limitations on sending food abroad.
And so this is the leader of the free world, by the way. I just want to
out with our European friends.
Like, if you can figure out what the hell he just said, all I know is what he said is that real food shortages we're going to feel this.
You know, what's so interesting, though, is the European Union prevents certain countries from growing its own crops of certain things so that it is dependent on crops from other places, right? So these types of things hurt individual economies. For instance, in Portugal, wheat must be imported from Eastern European countries when Portugal can grow pretty much anything. It's like the California of Europe. And so there's no talk of ending any kind of interdependence, which makes me feel in this day and age that everything you buy has political ties to it.
Of course.
Every single thing. And it's making me feel increasingly vulnerable to geopolitics just for going to the market and trying to feed a family of five, which is why I'd like to remind you that it is springtime. You can start your seeds indoors right now if you haven't already. I'm starting mine. I want a full crop of things. I'm terrible at canning, but I'm going to get better. And I'm going full on, you guys. I have to get, it's just so hard these days to realize everything you pick up from the shelves has some kind of political cost.
And he says, you know, with regard to food shortages, yes, we did talk about food shortages, and it's going to be real. It's going to be painful, you know. And he says, here's the thing, right? We are placing these sanctions at a time when the United States is facing a 40-year high inflation rate in record right now, 40-year high. And he keeps trying to blame, he did it again yesterday, he keeps trying to blame inflation in the United States on Putin. He keeps trying to blame gas prices on Putin. And again, so far, the only people that are being hurt by all of this are American people, European people, African people.
Right.
And guess who's not being hurt by this? So far, Western sanctions have done nothing to slow down Russia's attack.
Well, Ukraine has also put its own type of sanctions because they're saying they will no longer export food because they're worried about keeping any kind of survivability, rightly so, inside their country. So things that we're used to buying from there will hurt other countries when they're not able.
He was asked about this yesterday. Like, a reporter asked him and said, you know, these sanctions aren't doing anything. Like Putin's Putin's running the table right now, right?
Yes.
And he snapped at a reporter about this. He said, sanctions never deter. That's what he said. The maintenance of sanctions.
Isn't that what they're for?
That's what we were told. That's what we were told. So he says, sanctions never deter. The maintenance of sanctions, that's what he said. The increasing the pain. I'm quoting him, okay? This is not me babbling. I'm quoting him now. Mm-hmm. Sanctions never deter. The maintenance of sanctions, the increasing the pain and the demonstration. Why I asked for this NATO meeting today is to be sure that after a month, we will sustain what we're doing, not just next month, the following month, but for the remainder of this entire year. That's what will stop him.
This is like economic waterboarding.
What the hell you say?
Yeah.
What the hell? Like a Stephen He video.
I was finding it funny that people were like, you know, listen to Trump talk, and you could write up like they did this kid's book. Even Stephen Colbert wrote a book, and like with the way Trump talked, but at least you could kind of get like the message out of what he was saying. With Biden, I don't even get any semblance of any kind of message.
I disagree with that. I mean, just like personally, I couldn't understand like half of what Trump was saying. Like the message never came
neither
out.
Neither of
just,
them.
It was just tangential. Yeah, they're both just tangential. Yeah. Like
that was. But sanctions never deter. He yelled at this reporter. He's like, that's not the point. Sanctions never deter. Well, then what the hell are you doing?
Right.
What? This will make him stop. He finishes that paragraph. This will make him stop. Well, if it doesn't, if it's not a deterrent, then how is it going to make him stop? You're talking in circles. And the people that are being hurt right now are the American people paying way more for gas, way more for food, way more for childcare, way more for their housing prices, way more for everything right now.
It's very fuzzy math at this point. It doesn't seem to be making any sense. But, you know, the plan is to keep going, do more and more.
We're going to
I was just going to say really quick, I'm just shocked how the media, does the media that we have now, the journalists or prompter readers, do they go into a room and are they told, like, do you think they actually believe what's coming out of the administration? Or do you think that they are just complicit and like there has like they have to be on board with this, with reporting all of this stuff and not calling any of this into question, not like, you know, raising hell about it? Like, do you think that they legit believe what they are saying?
The people that work for him?
No, I'm talking about Jake Tapper and the media.
I mean, they love to curry favor with these guys. You know, I saw an interview today with CNBC with Janet Yellen and like Joe Kern or whatever his name is, the old guy on CNBC's morning show Squawk Box. He's like, you know, Secretary Yellen, he's like, oh, you did such a great job when you were in the Fed. Like, you did such a great job. Like, it's just like all this like brown nosing. And she's like, thanks so much, Joe. Yeah. I appreciate that, Joe. Thanks so much, Joe. I really appreciate that. Like, they want to be in those circles. They want to
go
to those dinners.
But how do they get so many of them to toe the line?
I don't think it's as intentional as all of that. I mean, you and I both worked for major news networks, and you know that there is a producer who says, we're going to do these five stories. And really, they just take the most popular ones that are on the wires, and they take it. Like, they take whatever it is that the bent is, and then you read it, and you're like, okay, good. I understand that. That makes sense to me. Very few of them are having time to do more than that. And then they sit in the makeup chair and they take it on air because what they're reading seems to make sense. I've done this before myself where you're like, yeah, okay, this is all the background reading. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, got it. And then you go on air. It's not a perfect system by any means.
Yeah, but when you're hosting a show like Meet the Press or Face the Nation or like you have two guests, right? You've got a major world leader on your show. Like, the reason Tim Russert was so beloved, because like I remember John McCain was on his show one time, and when they were all done, he said, thanks for joining us. He's like, well, that was, I've had prostate exams that went better than that. Like, and that's how it should be.
Yes.
You should face tough questions from, you know, God rest his soul, Tim Russert, but you should face tough questions from the press. Meet the press. The point of it is like, you're not, that's the fourth rail. That's the fourth estate. The press is the fourth estate. We should be asking these questions. And all of these White House reporters, they want to be able to fly on Air Force One. They want to be able to go to Brussels and hang out, go to these meals, go to the, you know, that's what they all want to do.
So that's how this agenda of Russia being responsible for all of this stuff, the inflation, the gas, like all of these journalists are just want access, so they're willing to perpetuate this story. Like, that's it. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me how all of them get together and do this
but
at, on a mass
no
level.
But there's no real impetus, though. I mean, just from working inside a news media, in news organization, it's not... No one's sitting there thinking, is this the right story? It doesn't feel right. Like, you get swept up with the idea of, like, not wearing a mask is someone who's a selfish a-hole, and getting the vaccine, anyone who won't do that is a selfish a-hole. And you get swept up in it because the algorithm doesn't help, because if you're the kind of person who is reading those stories, that's what the algorithm is going to serve you more of.
Well, and like Tulsi Gabbard yesterday put out a video. She said, I'm being shadow banned. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard being shadow banned. Like, because of her coming out and having an opinion and based on facts about these biolabs in Ukraine, right? She's now being blocked, downvoted, like hidden from the internet, basically, because she has this opinion. And if you're a young 25-year-old journalist working at CNN, the last thing you want to do is rock the boat, right? So you're going to curry favor. You're going to go along with these people. They're going to pay your salary. You're going to go hang out with your friends in New York City or Atlanta, and you're going to be all fine and dandy, rising up the ladder. You know, the beauty of this show is that we don't answer to any of those people. Like, I don't give a rat's ass. You know, we're going to dive into the facts as they come, and we don't have any agenda here. We don't have any producers telling us what to say. We don't have any billionaires telling us how to craft a narrative.
Yes, but I just don't think it's, and a lot of people who work for the news are good people. And I just don't think it's not that easy when you're working on a job of deliverables and you have to produce a show or a newspaper every single day to sort of stop and think, like, is this right? I don't know about this. You know,
that's the thing. You would think that they hired you for your journalism skills to do journalism, because
then
all you're doing is reading
a story out of anything, right? So if I were assigned this story, for instance, this Russian fail rate of weapons, right? And so I could say, okay.
So you mean like your
US
boss comes
officials
to you
and say, yeah, I'd like you to produce a story about this. Whether I'm on air or not, it doesn't matter, right? Let's just say that this is my assignment for the day. And so I go and I talk to these people who say, yes, 60% of these Russian missiles are failing. I talk to the experts. Maybe I talk to an arms expert. Maybe I talk to someone who is actually physically there or has seen them, right? And then, like, I've got my three quota. I've got my three quotes. I've got some background done. What I may or may not have had time to do was read an entire book or do something about, like, is that normal? Or, you know, that kind of... Plus, as a reporter...
It's just that they're not taking time to look into the counter of a story because they don't have time.
Perhaps, right? And then after I submit my story, usually reporters don't write their own headlines. The headline people are the, like, clickologists. They're the ones who want to get you to click on the story. And so that's usually out of their hands. So a lot of times we see these stories and the headline is really inflammatory, but the journalism is not. But that doesn't matter, because it changes the algorithm of what we're going to see.
A lot of times you see the narrative changing, though, and the narrative changes publicly, but the journalists tend to keep the establishment narrative going. So that at some point it starts to tip to being more, you know, they're doing it on purpose rather than, because they have to be listening to other sides of stories, you would think. They're journalists. Like, they should be looking into the stuff that they're talking about, I would think. Do you know what I'm saying? Because, like, yeah, I can see you doing a story the first time, but then as the narrative changes publicly, as the public opinion changes, as information changes, but you keep pushing the same agenda, because why?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of these young reporters that come up, they're not journalists. I mean, they just want to see themselves on TV. Like, I remember I worked with a girl in, I don't know, West Virginia. She didn't know the first thing about, I mean, like, getting to the heart of a story. You know, she just wanted to be on TV, wanted to see herself on TV, you know? And she's like, oh yeah, my dad buys me all these Ann Taylor suits so I can look good on TV. Like, she didn't care about, like, the actual story. You know, that's so few and far between. By the way, there's almost, like, no money in it too. So it's like, you know, there's more money in just, like, seeing yourself on TV than there is, like, actually being a journalist. We covered one, I forget her name, but she was covering the union strikes in down south, and you know, she makes no money. She's out there every day covering this story, And you know, she's lucky. She's like, I'm on the road. I'm like sleeping in my car. She's like, I've been sleeping in my car, covering this story. How many people are going to do that?
That is the plot of The Newsroom, the Apple show.
That's such a good show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that a real person you just talked about, or were you?
It's Reese Witherspoon's.
Yeah.
It's not a.
Talking about a different person?
I'm talking an actual journalist.
You know? I'm like, do you know that character?
You know, that's so few and far between.
You mean morning show?
The morning show.
Yeah.
Oh, you said the
Newsroom. Was a different show. Just as good as
I feel like, though, that we as like a society have gotten away from any love of nuance. And like, we just don't want nuance. We want to be entertained and we want our information fast. And so it's just like, you tune it in, you just want, okay, this is what they said. Okay, that's what I'm walking away with. And you don't really want to look into it, because then
that's where you find
nuance. You find that, you know, right. like where you get things like Zelensky is not a saint, but it's like, yes, he is fighting this war. So you have that, you know, it's like he is trying to defend his country. So that's like, that is true. But also it is true that he is not a saint. In that is that gray area in the middle. And we don't like that. It's good or bad, just black or white.
Right. I mean, you know, we love our like listicles, you know, like our top five things on BuzzFeed, you know, like we love our
Monday
top five
football.
Lists and very fast, quick stuff. Yeah. We don't like the nuance of things. And that's what I hope we try to bring you here on the show, is like, it's not black and white. Anyway, we've got a lot more to derail here.
It just bugs me that they're able to push this narrative and nobody questions Biden on anything. So,
well, we do. We've got a lot more to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about why are Americans in Ukraine fighting. We're going to show you some unbelievable video this morning and some Americans trying to get out of Ukraine who cannot. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to look at has Vladimir Putin basically duped everyone? We're going to look at that and so much more. But first,
we're going to tell you about our show sponsor over at Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens is a company that helps you get your greens, your daily nutrition, in a delicious drink. We use them regularly. In fact, Athletic Greens has a AG1 formulation, which includes all numbers of high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. They're great to help you start your day, or even as a meal replacement in the middle of the day, which is how Clayton usually takes them. It is lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. They contain less than 1 gram of sugar and no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything. And they really do taste great. Even our children, you know, when you mix it up, it looks green and they're kind of like, I don't know about that. But they like it a whole lot. And it mixes quite nicely in their morning smoothies as well. It supports better sleep, better immunity, mental clarity, and alertness. Right now, if you try Athletic Greens, they are going to give you 1 free year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D, which is one of the most important nutrients that you can put into your body. And most Americans are very insufficient in vitamin D, myself included. So I have been taking this immune-supporting vitamin D, and it's nice. It's just a little drop that you put on your tongue for fast absorption. So not only will you get that free gift, you'll get 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/invest. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/invest to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
All right. So an interesting take on what's happening right now in Russia is that what if Vladimir Putin has outplayed all of us or all of the Western leaders? An interesting article this morning published by a journalist who's been covering this says, has Russia executed the most devilish plan of the 21st century? What if Putin had outplayed us all? Now, what he's specifically referring to is monetary policy. And I think this is a really fascinating story. On Wednesday, Putin basically said, from now on, anyone who wants to buy gas from us, these unfriendly countries, you're going to have to pay us in rubles, including the United States and the EU. Well, we're not done buying gas from them anytime soon. It's going to be years, right?
And wait, so the sanctions don't cover that?
No, there's no way to cover that.
I mean, how are you going to do that? Like, if you want what he's got, he's telling you, I'm not taking your U.S. dollars anymore. I'm not taking your euro anymore. You want my gas. You want my oil. You're going to pay me in rubles.
I'm going to get a lot of good for him.
Right, stock up on rubles then. I mean, that's the point of this, right?
Well, what's interesting is that when you put this in the context of the Cold War that the United States has been in against China, right? So the United States is currently the default currency of exchange in other countries, not just buying and selling goods inside the United States. So if two countries who use different currencies want to buy and sell something, they trade on the dollar, making the United States the default currency of the world. China has been waiting, maybe patiently or not patiently, to take over that global position because the United States is not growing commensurately with global trade. The world business, to dumb it down a little bit, is bigger than the United States can support. There is not enough dollars, no matter how much the United States issues, there's not enough dollars to support global trade in dollars. And so China has been doing these kind of covert moves to kind of sneak in and become the default currency. Meanwhile, Russia goes in and says, well, now we're not trading on the dollar anymore. We're not going to accept anything other than our own currency for trade, which you still need, right? So this author
makes... That's like reverse sanctions.
Absolutely. So this author, and it blows my mind when you think about it that way, but the author makes the point that while China is doing kind of, you know, maybe sneaky business type moves that in order to get into this position, maybe Putin calculated that nothing other than a violent attack would actually give him the power to do this. So now as countries want to get what they've got, they're going to have to go out and exchange for rubles, which will increase the value of the ruble.
Right. And even more bewildering, he writes in this piece, is that the Central Bank of Russia has been increasing its reserves of U.S. treasuries since last November. Like, it was really ramping up its purchases of U.S. treasuries and U.S. treasury bonds. Like, isn't that, like, they knew something was coming, right? So they're buying up U.S. treasuries.
I don't completely understand that, because it says that that maybe they thought that they would need to surrender it.
Surrender it or sacrifice them, as he points out in this piece, right? Suggesting that Moscow was ready to sacrifice them, saying that few in Russia may still have a forlorn hope to eventually recover these assets shortly after the end of the conflict, like that they bought into these U.S. treasuries. But he says this scenario seems unlikely, as the EU's abrasive behavior shows no signs of abating. So they bought these U.S. securities. They're holding them. That means we don't have access to them.
And one thing I heard, and I don't know if there's...
Seize them?
I don't know if there's truth to this, is that China holds a bunch of them too, and that if China and Russia would get together and put those, like, I don't know how they put them back into our economy, but if they just like thrust them back into our economy in some way, it would crash our economy, that they could take us down financially. And I don't know how those work, but they have, but them holding so many of those assets is like the money's there, but like if they flood it back to us, then our dollar becomes even more devalued. Worthless. Because yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, if you think about it, hey, you want my gas, you want my oil. We've wanted to move off of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Like, why are we in Russia using the U.S. dollar as our reserve currency? Why are we in China using the dollar as our reserve currency? Why are we in India using the reserve currency of the U.S. dollar? Like, we have the rupee, we have the Chinese yuan, we have the Russian ruble. Like, why are we using the U.S. dollar? Like, we're reliant on them. So this could have been really, as he points out, the ultimate gameplay here.
Yes. You know?
We're all sort of, you know, Western countries are sort of like left holding the bag here on basically worthless U.S. dollars, $30 trillion in debt.
Well, think of how many European countries now hold on to the U.S. dollar in order to buy into Russian gas. And now they'll have to dump those dollars, convert them to
rupees is India, yeah.
And so now all of a sudden, a whole lot of Russian currency that was not going to be purchased will be purchased. Russia doesn't have to take in foreign currency and convert it. They're just going to be able to start collecting it. So we can sanction, the West can sanction all it wants, but if it still needs to buy into Russian companies, then it is going to have to go to one of those airport exchange places and get a different currency than they were intending. That's a joke. You can't do that. at the airport.
And like I've always said, this is like the old schoolyard story of the bully, you know, that keeps punching kids. And then one day, one kid steps up and punches that bully in the nose. What was Putin supposed to do? Like, we have been manipulating the economy, the world economy, with our dollar that is being less valuable and less valuable all the time. We're bombing places wherever we want. And it's about time somebody steps up and tries to put us in our place. And it's going to crash our economy. But like, this has been coming for a long time.
We've been talking about this here on the show for a while now, right? And we've been talking about China has been stockpiling gold, right? And so has Russia. And yes. So there's been questions about over the past few days, and I think this is a really interesting part of the story, is the gold question.
Yes.
Where is all the gold? Does Russia hold gold offshore in other exchanges? Turns out, no. Turns out it's, as the Russian Foreign Office has now said, well, we have all our gold, and it's here. It's here on our land. So we have all our gold bars. We have our own Fort Knox. We have been stockpiling gold for years. And by the way, so has China. And over the past few years, while we've been ignoring this in the United States, and we've moved, you know, the United States has moved off any kind of a gold standard in the 1960s, or 1971. So China has been stockpiling gold. Russia has been stockpiling gold. They have their own currency, which is now basically trying to de-dollarize the world by, now you want your oil? You want it? You're going to have to use rubles. And that's why you're going to see a lot of investors. I don't know how they're going to do this, but instead of running to the US dollar, which is quickly losing its stance in the world, you're going to see a lot of investors having to sit there saying, how am I going to, John, can you buy me some rubles? I need to get some rubles. I need to get my money in some Chinese yuan.
And you're going behind the sanctions. Like, you got to skirt the sanctions to do it too.
It's going
to
happen. And you know that Wall Street, it's going to happen. And you're going to have foreign exchanges. It's gonna be, this is how the elites are playing this game right now. And I like what he says here. He says, many countries do not necessarily embrace the West's so-called democratic values. Though nominally, U.S. allies in the case of Turkey, the Gulf states, and to a lesser extent India, have come to realize that their dollar-dominated, denominated assets could be weaponized against them as soon as their interests start to veer off. And by the way, that's exactly what's happened.
For every world power.
It's true, but it's already happening.
Yes.
Right. So for many years, we don't want you to buy Russian oil. Well, okay. So then we're going to pull you off of the US dollar. The money that you have right now is going to be taken away from you. For many years, there had been talks of the de-dollarization, but nothing ever materialized. Putin's venturesomeness led him to open the Pandora box, which everyone wanted to open but never dared to, and usher in a new multipolar momentum.
Well, and this is the catalyst. Yeah, this is the catalyst. But the thing is, now they literally can blame Russia for our economy crashing, but it's ultimately our fault.
Well,
for what we've done. What we've done all over the world economically and... You know,
when you think of rogue economics and global politics, the fault is to be had. There's blame to be shared. I don't think that it's. I mean, yeah, the United. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, I definitely agree with that point. That like this is that's the problem, is like this black and white thing. There's so much in the middle here. It's like there are no saints in this. So there's not like we're bad and Russia is good. It's not
There's not like angel Putin floating above everything here.
Right.
Well, nobody's saying that, but like Russia's not out there bombing everyone.
I use Portuguese history a lot, you know, because I think that Portugal was such a lesson in maintaining neutrality during World War II. And when Salazar decided that they would sell weapons materials, not actual weapons, but the materials that make weapons, to both the Allies and the Nazi forces, he decided he had to do both, or else his country would be pulled into a war that he thought was his main reason for existing, was to keep the Portuguese people out of that war. And he decided he could continue to sell to the Allies because Portugal has a longstanding relationship with England and they had already been trading. So he allowed the Allies to continue to buy on credit. But the Germans, he did not. He said, well, we don't have an existing relationship to you, but we have to sell to both sides, but you will have to pay in cash. And they did. They paid in gold. They paid in, you know, actual physical dollars. And so I think that that's an interesting lesson at this point, because you don't necessarily have – you if you are selling goods and services to, let's call it, the enemy, right, you still can set the terms.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, like, we'll wrap this point up on this, which is he if you want oil and gas from Russia, you either buy it in rubles, their currency, or gold. So they're allowing you to buy it in gold. Okay. If you are a friendly nation to Russia, you can transfer Chinese yuan. We'll take your Chinese yuan. We're not taking the US dollar anymore. And Bitcoin. Watch now as Russia becomes one of the wealthiest countries in the world in a short amount of time. Think about this. They now can stockpile more and more gold. They can accept
just out of curiosity,
their own government currency and Bitcoin, right? And what, they don't have to then rely on a falling US dollar for their economy. Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, when you say they can take gold, is that that's obviously, like, does that mean the dinar and the South African whatever their coin is, like that kind of coin, any gold actual coin, or are you talking bullion? Like,
yeah. So he points out here, the head of the State Duma Budget Committee says this, right? Russia can sell energy resources to unfriendly countries for its national currency, Russian rubles, and gold, while for friendly countries, transfer payments for their national currencies, yuan, liar, and dinar, and Bitcoin.
Lira.
Right. I said liar.
So he'll be collecting, right, non-controversial currency, and then being paid in his preferred currency. So, you know, we're not really stripping Vladimir Putin of all the power that we think we are, despite what the media would tell us.
Right. So what if Putin had outplayed all of us? Let us know your thoughts on that in the chat below. Meanwhile, as we look at what's happening in the world and we look at what's happening in this region, there's been a lot of questions as to why are Americans showing up? Like, you know, this is not getting a lot of coverage in the mainstream media, or really any coverage in the mainstream media at all. Raise your hand if you've seen, like, your nightly newscast covering the fact that American soldiers are in Ukraine fighting against Russian soldiers. You're probably not seeing that. In fact, there are a number of American soldiers. They're technically listed as volunteers, but they're fully outfitted in all sorts of gear that clearly was provided to them by the United States military. They are there going village to village in what they're saying is liberation of these Ukrainian towns. Listen to James Vasquez. He is an American. I don't know what his rank is, but he's there leading a group of other American soldiers going village to village. And he's been posting on social media. He's gotten some criticism about this because people are saying, hey,
we're not supposed to be there.
You're not supposed to be there. But also geolocation data is showing exactly where you are when you make these posts. So be careful. But anyway, here's what he has to say. And I'll show you some
video. And wait, the geolocation data does show him in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, we're not even in these villages long enough for anyone to find us. Like, we're here when I post it, but we've already moved on. So don't worry about geolocation. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about that.
All right. So far, we took out 7 Russian tanks. After a long firefight, we took control of the area. Right now, we're going to just kind of sweep around and see what we got left. Some stragglers. Take them out. Call it a day. It's been a long day.
Take them out?
It's been a long day, baby.
Yeah, we're Americans. We're here. And so Ukrainian embassy is dealing with, you know, a lot of U.S. citizens trying to get into the war. They've had thousands of people who thought, like, at the early stages of this, hey, we want to go help. We want to go help and fight because we think, you know, obviously Russians invaded here. So this is unwarranted. We want to go help. But they're saying, like, we're having to really turn people away. And they're saying, like, the U.S. government discourages Americans from going to fight in Ukraine, which raises legal and national security issues. Since the February 24th invasion, the embassy in Washington has heard from at least 6,000 people inquiring about volunteering for the service. Half of the potential volunteers were quickly rejected and didn't make it into the Zoom interview. Who's interviewing people for this? Like, okay, I don't get this.
This is not sanctioned.
It's probably one of those safari things. It's like, hey, we've got giraffes, we've got this, and we've got Russians. Like, you apply here.
Come on over here. You want to shoot some Russians?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you Don Jr.? You want to go take your picture with a dead elephant after you shoot it? You want to go shoot some Russians? Like, for a lot of these guys who grew up, like, watching, like, Red Dawn in the 1980s,
Red Dawn, yeah.
You know, like, this is an opportunity, right?
This is, but you know what? The problem is so many, but one of which is that once those people are captured and then held hostage, it will cost our taxpayer dollars to get them back, because that is part of our social contract, is that when you get yourself involved in international conflicts, the United States military will come for you. So,
well, and
if he's not even, he's not even willing to hide his geolocation, he's not playing it very smart. And these kind of things are usually never sanctioned by the military in any branch. In fact, I'll tell you a background story. Clayton's brother-in-law works for a military branch, which is the NOAA Corps. And once he sent pictures of just like, I think it was just like dolphins or something that they had seen, remember?
Yeah.
And Clayton showed, either you showed it on Fox or you put it on your social media or something like that. And they were like, do not do that. And it was just like he was out to see, here's a dolphin.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do that, right? You're not supposed to share anything like that, period. This, which makes me think these are not sanctioned videos.
Well, of course,
videos.
No, these are volunteered. These are volunteers.
It has to be somewhat sanctioned, because how are they getting all those weapons over there? It's not that, well, when here, they get me, there, somebody's got to be handing them to them.
Live in America. Guns are at the Walmart.
I know, but you can't take it on a plane over to Ukraine with you.
Let me go through this. So here, they must make their... So far, about 100 U.S. citizens have made the cut in this interview process, which I would love to know, like, who's getting interviewed in this? Like, how do you... Who's putting up these interviews?
And how are people finding it?
They include veterans of the Iraq War in Iraq and Afghanistan with combat experience, including some helicopter pilots. The attaché said, I want to be known as an attaché. They must make their own way to Poland. They have to buy their own ticket to get to Poland, where they're then allowed to cross at a specified point. They're allowed in with their own protective gear, but without a weapon, which they will get after they arrive. Then they will be required to sign a contract to serve without pay in the International Legion for the Territorial Defense of Ukraine. The Ukrainian government says about 20,000 foreigners from various nations have already joined. Okay. And Canada, liberal lawmakers in Canada, they're helping to facilitate their recruitment in Canada. About 1,000 Canadians have applied to fight as well.
Who's, are they sending out an email? Like, what? How are they finding these people? Like, posting online?
You remember when Zelensky made his big announcement a few weeks ago? He's like, come fight for us.
Yes.
You know, come fight for us. Come join us here. But
apparently that's all anybody needs. Like, you don't have a child to raise at home. You're going to walk away from diaper changing and go do that.
But the problem is, so these troops come there, right? And they're like, oh, okay, we've heard so much about Ukraine being this amazing place and the Ukrainian army. We're going to help the Ukrainian army. Turns out it's not as easy as that. Right. It might be easy for James Vasquez, who's by himself with a group of other Americans. But when you're now joining up with the Ukrainian army, this is what you're finding out. So this is an American infantryman. He went to fight alongside of these individuals. His name is Henry. And he got there and he said, it turns out it's a total crap show. Listen to what he has to say.
Our base got f***ed up. The base right next to us got f***ed up. Americans, British, tons of British dead. They're trying to send us to Kiev with no weapons, no kit, no plates. So they told us we had to get the fuck out or they were going to shoot us in the back. When you get to the border, anyone who has kit, anyone who has any military, they're fucking pulling you out of the line and they're sending you back to the front. People need to stop coming here. It's a trap and they're not letting you fucking leave.
Okay, so that was expletive laden and we did not warn you.
Well, he's being, you know, and he said, look, you're getting, they're telling you to go back and fight. Like, no, this is not what I signed up for. Like, you guys are leading a crap show here. Like, we're seeing also that Ukrainian citizens are being killed. Like, we didn't sign up for this. This is not what's being advertised to us on CNN, by the way. Mm-hmm. So we want out of here. No, you're not going out of here. You're not going anywhere. Go back.
Sorry, we didn't mention that you'll be killing ethnic Russians.
Right.
From the other side of Ukraine.
I mean, here's more.
Another day in paradise.
These are the Americans. This was shared on social media last night.
Got a couple guys that got shot just a little while ago. Brought them to the rear with a tank. Got my man right there, my commander. He's got the USA patch on his shoulder. Got burning buildings. We got mortars. We got rockets.
We love this thing.
That's a house.
All the fun stuff to make it a beautiful day.
A beautiful day.
We got the American patch on the shoulder. We got a burning house. We got mortars. We got everything to make it a beautiful day.
This is the... Now, I don't know if you guys know what this is behind me. That's a Russian tank that was taken out.
You know what's really sad about all this, though, is there are a bunch of people that are cheering this on.
Welcome to America.
You're not in America.
What'd you say, David?
I said the sad thing is there's so many people that are cheering this on that are like, yes, rah, rah, America, go over there, kill them.
Yeah. I mean, you should read through the tweet thread after James Vasquez tweeted this. They're like, you go, brother. Way to go, man. You and look, they went in, they liberated this for 30 days. This particular village had been controlled by Russians. So they went in, these Americans, soldiers, and liberated this village from Russian soldiers in Ukraine. Like, okay, on its face, great, thank you for helping. But look at the broader, larger consequences of all of this. I mean, just listen to the president just a few days ago.
The idea that we're going to send in offensive equipment and have planes and tanks and trains going in with American pilots and American crews, just understand, and don't kid yourself, no matter what you all say, that's called World War III. Okay? Let's get it straight here, guys. That old expression, don't kid a kidder.
Yeah. Under some circumstances, Americans could face criminal penalties or even risk losing their American citizenship by taking part in an overseas conflict, according to federal law enforcement officials on this story. U.S. citizens aren't required to register overseas. The State Department says it's not certain how many have even entered Ukraine since the Russian invasion began.
So this is a so let me get this straight. There's a private company somehow doing online campaigns or knowing how to contact ex-soldiers in a way to get them to volunteer to go over there. They're getting them there. They're giving them weapons. And it's not sanctioned by our government at all whatsoever. Like, no, how does that happen? There's no way. There's no way our hands aren't on it.
Of course. I mean, that's the thing. Like, so they're doing these Zoom meetings. I just don't get it. I mean, they're having like these like discussions at the Pentagon, or who's doing this? Like this attaché. Well,
then it has to be organized to give them a weapon. You're entering a country and then they're just there waiting for you. And like, here's your weapon.
Well,
here's your grenades.
Say you have to get yourself to Poland. And if you have a kit, so somehow you've traveled with it,
or yeah, I guess you bring your body armor,
already
your helmet.
Found it in Poland, or maybe you have Jason Bourne resources where you know where to pick this stuff up.
Yeah, like it's like drop, you don't know where you got this.
Yeah, and then you get to the checkpoint, and then you're handed all the machinery, you're handed all your grenades, you're handed all your weapons and everything.
Well, he said they don't have it for us, but if you BYO'd,
yeah,
then you're set to the front. Otherwise,
but how are you gonna? You can't bring grenades and magazines and M16s and AR-15s and all that in a plane.
Yeah,
these are not the rules of engagement that you and I are used to living by. Yeah. So.
And another thing that bothered me about that is the fact that they're sitting there and they said, these buildings are on fire. That was a house. That was clearly a house.
Yeah.
Making it sound like
it's in
some
a neighborhood
building.
Well, they were in this village. I mean, again, this is James Vasquez. This is the guy. You can watch him on Twitter and you can see his Twitter feed as he posts regularly.
Good, because I've missing some toxic male masculinity.
You need that.
That's what
you
know, I'll
do. You want to join? Go on over there. We're going to fight these Russians.
Not enough of that in my feed.
We don't fight them here. We fight them there, as Adam Schiff.
Oh my God,
us.
You guys! When we get to trending, I'm going to go off on this story about masculinity.
Oh boy, get
so
ready!
So I'm warning you on this.
We've got more news to get to here. Let's. We're going to talk about Germany and Trudeau in just a moment, plus this big Trump lawsuit. But first, I want to tell you about a new show sponsor. It's almost springtime, or it is springtime now, guys. And I'm telling you, you want your outside area to look fantastic, and here's how you do it. Our friends over at Outer have created some of the best backyard, most beautiful, comfortable, innovative, and high-quality outdoor furniture, all from sustainable materials. And it's the only outdoor furniture with a patent built-in cover to make it protecting effortless. So you don't have to worry about it getting sun damage and all of that stuff. It looks absolutely gorgeous. You don't have to go outside and wonder if that's like going to be all wet and it's going to be all, you know, moldy or anything like that. No, they've decided that they wanted to build the world's best furniture for outside and where you can actually enjoy that space. From teak chairs to fire pit tables, everything Outer makes has the look and feel of what you'd expect a five-star resort to have for less than you'd pay at a big box store for something that won't last. The thing is, I bought stuff at like Home Depot and stuff that's like, it's broken down after like one season. Not the stuff that you get from Outer. Absolutely gorgeous outdoor ottomans, chairs, sofas, sectionals, fire pit tables, everything. And it'll last. Why would you want to buy something that you're going to throw away? It's going to break down after just a short amount of time. They have stunning modular designs to customize your space, life-proof material with a nano coating that's water, mold, bleach, and stain resistant. They have over 1,000 neighborhood showrooms across the country, so you can see Outer right in person. You can go to these different areas and check these showrooms out. So here's what you want to do. I love my outer products. They're really fantastic. They make sitting outside. I love to be outside. I love sitting out there with like my Kindle or my iPad and doing some work. I want to be outside rather than inside, especially when it's nice out. And I love checking out their virtual showrooms. Their virtual showrooms are so cool. You can go and visit these different showrooms virtually or go drive to a local one and check it out. They're always clean, dry, and ready to use. Really, really great. And they have this outer shell cover that protects the furniture from rain and mildew and all of that. So what I want you to do is I want you to go try it now. See the difference. Go to the website. It's liveouter.com. So it's liveouter.com/invest. liveouter.com/invest. Plus, for a limited time, get $300 off and free shipping. Remember, don't just go to outer.com. You got to go to liveouter.com. liveouter.com/invest. This is Outer's best offer anywhere. Only available at to our listeners here at the show. And for a limited time, get $300 off and free shipping at liveouter.com/invest. That's liveouter.com/invest. liveouter.com/invest. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to them for supporting the show. I love their stuff. Love it. All right. So you may have been watching over the past few days as Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has flown over to Brussels once again. You know, he's reviled back home in Canada. So he's spending a lot more time now in Belgium trying to elevate Canada on the world stage and really doing a piss poor job of it. Going over to the European Union to lecture the rest of the world about freedom and democracy. He's saying all of this with a straight face, right? So yesterday he spoke and he was denounced by the Prime Minister of Moldova, among other world leaders. But yesterday, Germany, after his speech, holy smokes, I don't know if you guys saw this, but they just laid into him. Two members of the German parliament got up and just eviscerated him. This individual I'm going to play from Munich first. This is the fourth MP that rebuked Mr. Trudeau. And saying, how can you dare come here and lecture us about democracy after what you did to those Freedom Convoy individuals in your own country, stealing their bank accounts, stealing their money, stealing their trucks? Listen to just one. I've got two different ones here. This is dubbed, okay, with a woman's voice. But this is the gentleman. Listen to him.
Here are our European democratic values that underpin all of our actions. I worked in Syria and Pakistan for many years as a diplomat and therefore value democracy very highly. Now, the invitation to Canadian PM Justin Trudeau is an invitation to someone who's been trampling on democratic rights, who's been cracking down on people who protested against disproportionate corona measures. People's who were supporting a non-sanctioned movement coming under criticism. So clearly the values of democracy are being despised by this individual. Let us not give someone like this any speaking time in this house of democracy.
Now.
He was like...
Ms. Garcia Perez.
Oh, an applause even.
Yeah, there is applause. They're like, let's shut his microphone down because that's not what democracy is.
Yeah. Christine Anderson, though, who speaks English, got up and boy, did she lay into him from Germany as well. Like, here we are in the European Union. Like, we're debating whether or not to allow Ukraine into our body, which is trampling on democracy. And we think that they're corrupt government, so they are not allowed to be a member of the European Union. You're flying over here from Canada after what you just pulled a few weeks ago, clamping down on personal freedoms, and you're going to lecture us about democracy slipping in the world. Here's Christine Anderson from Germany. Listen to this one. Holy smokes.
Based on Article 195, out that it would have been more appropriate for Mr. Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, to address this House according to Article 144, an article which was specifically designed to debate violations of human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, which is clearly the case with Mr. Trudeau. Then again, a prime minister who openly admires the Chinese basic dictatorship, who tramples on fundamental rights by persecuting and criminalizing his own citizens as terrorists just because they dared to stand up to his perverted concept of democracy, should not be allowed to speak in this house at all. Mr. Trudeau, you are a disgrace for any democracy. Please spare us your presence. Thank you.
Nice.
Oh, girl.
Wow.
Well, Germans
don't... Why don't we get any shots of his like this?
Germans don't beat around the bush.
I want to know how she really feels.
Yeah. I wish Carol Daly would get a chance, too. The Irish PM.
There was I think what she was referring to there was an article, I think, early in Trudeau's term where he did say he admired some of the powers of the Chinese president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what she's referring to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where he referred to the idea that you could, without the rule of law, basically clamp down on personal freedoms.
Yeah, like, he liked that.
He likes that.
That was a page out of his playbook.
By the way, I mean, there was a lot of that yesterday. I don't know if you saw President Biden, who was in shaking hands with Charlie Michel, who has serving a 5-year term, okay, as the economic or the head of the EU Council, right? He just had a confidence vote just the other day. So he's 5-year term. Like this, he didn't just win an election. Like he's going to be serving. He's like halfway through a 5-year term. But President Biden didn't know that. He doesn't have any idea. He just thought he was like he just got reelected with no opposition at all. Like you just got this job with no opposition at all. Here was President Biden shaking his hand. And this comment was like totally cringeworthy.
Well, I came to congratulate a man who just got reelected without opposition. I dream about that someday. But look, from the very beginning...
Charlie's like, what the hell are you talking about? I wasn't reelected. I'm serving a 5-year term. We just had a vote of confidence in the council. Like, that's what we do every year. What the hell are you talking about? And oh, by the way, you love the idea of running without opposition?
Right.
Like, so there's no opposition party? You already have that anyway.
No, that's a stupid joke. He was trying to be silly.
I get it. But you know what? Where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, and he, by the way, he has that already. He doesn't have an opposition. Like, that's why they were able to stamp out Bernie Sanders. They were able to stamp out the Green Party, you know, other members of the opposition. Grover has something to say about
that. He's pissed about that.
Yeah. Did Trudeau, just out of curiosity, did Trudeau get an applause after his speech or was it completely silent? Did we see that?
People walked out.
I did see people walk out. I didn't hear the end of the speech, though. I didn't want to sit through that 20-minute.
We're done with you and your feathered hair. We don't want to hear from you.
Photo. Start calling him Photo.
Photo.
Like faux. Yeah. Fake.
They call him the Toff. They call him, what do they call him? Toff. The Toff leader. Or the Toff leader or something like that.
Man, Grover's really upset about this.
Yeah.
He's not having it. All right. Well, I do want to talk about the Trump lawsuit this morning because on Thursday in a federal court in Florida, former President Donald Trump has filed a lawsuit against former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, as well as her campaign and her, we're going to call them her friends, her colleagues, her co-workers in this effort. He is alleging that her role in tying his campaign to Russia is what started all manner of headaches for him and is what continues to offer him headaches in terms of investigations, litigation, things that persist for him even after his presidency has ended. Now, the mainstream media was very quick to laugh this off. I saw some headlines this morning saying Trump headlines may face, Trump lawyers may face sanction or disbanding over bringing a lawsuit that is frivolous. So the mainstream media would have you believe this is a political move. He just wants the attention. It's a frivolous lawsuit. Perhaps, right? And so Clayton and I tried to make our way through it. It's 108 pages, a claim. Now, when you open a game of litigation, you sort of throw in the kitchen sink. You have to. You name everybody you can. Anyone you can shake a stick at, you can sue. You name every possible legal violation of what they did, and you lay out what you think is the worst case. It's your opening salvo, and you have to exaggerate, right? But then comes the responses. And I think this is interesting because you have to know he's been sued enough times and has sued enough people to know that once you get into litigation, you open yourself up to discovery. of all manner of things. Now, I did read the book Where Law Ends by Andrew. I can't think of his name right now. Clayton just went to get Grover and he can show you the title of the book. I've read a lot about the Mueller investigation, enough to know that President Trump actually went out of his way not to participate in that investigation. And he did dangle pardons in front of anybody who he wanted to discourage from participating. And they were always well-timed pardons. So as soon as the federal investigators would sort of circle around somebody, Trump would say either publicly or privately, well, maybe this pardon would be, they were well placed, right? So we can be sure that the former president really tried not to participate in an investigation about any connections with Russia. So why then would he open himself up to a lawsuit about Russian investigation when he will have to then participate in discovery? He will have to, because truth is an absolute defense. So then if the Clinton campaign, if the federal government, if anyone related to Christopher Steele, who was the person who wrote the dossier that said perhaps Vladimir Putin has things on Trump that are embarrassing and that's why Vladimir Putin exerts this kind of control over Trump, if those things are true, then that is an absolute defense. So now there is a court, he is opening himself up to allow the Democrats to prove it or disprove it, right? So it's more risky than just like a political move so that he could say, hey, you know, they did this to me. I sued them because it was so untrue. The named defendants include Christopher Steele, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the former head of the Democratic National Committee, and all sorts of other Democratic strategists. I think what will be interesting here is that they each now have to respond. You have to respond to litigation. You don't have a choice. Once you're named, you're in the fight. That's how it works. And so it's highly unlikely that these people will all use the same legal defense. I would be really pissed off if they used any kind of government resources in their legal defense. But I don't think there will be any way for them to do that. So now they all have to lawyer up with hardcore lawyers. Most of them will issue what's called a motion to dismiss, saying this is ridiculous. We're not even going to play this game. Maybe it goes forward. Maybe it doesn't. There's no secure answer to that. But now it will result in infighting between these Democratic leaders. And it's interesting. I think at the very least, it's interesting, no matter what we think of it, because it would be incredibly stupid for him to have gone out of his way not to participate in the Mueller investigation and then open himself up, do the same thing in his own private litigation. Why?
Yeah. I mean, like, again, I think where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, that's my take on all of this, right? Because a few weeks ago, of course, we had some, you know, big stories surrounding this coming out about the involvement of the Democratic Party and what they were trying to do. And so maybe that was the impetus for all of this. But in the lawsuit specifically, it says, you know, under the guise of opposition research, data analytics, and other political stratagems, the defendants nefariously sought to sway the public's trust. They worked together with a single self-serving purpose to vilify Donald Trump. Indeed, their far-reaching conspiracy was designed to cripple Trump's bid for the presidency by fabricating a scandal that would be used to trigger an unfounded federal investigation and ignite a media frenzy.
Okay, that's actually, so that is at least something that I know from the book is called Where Law Ends by Andrew Weissman, and he was one of the lead investigators on the, this is the book, on the Mueller investigation. And he specifically said that what he thought, I have a few clips, the first one there, okay, so this is interesting. He says that contrary to claims by Trump loyalists, the factual predicate for the investigation had nothing to do with the Steele dossier, because if you read up higher, the FBI had already opened an investigation into possible links between Russia and Trump in July of 2016, a year before the appointment of Mueller, and predated to the Steele dossier. So that in and of itself is interesting, right? If that already exists, if we already know that, then this may or may not have anything to do with Hillary Clinton. He further says that there is actually a lot of information. They had so much communication between the Russians and the Trump campaign. And what specifically the Russians wanted was when Trump got into office was an end to sanctions, right? The inkling, he says, for us, this was the first inkling to what the Russian government really wanted from their involvement with the Trump administration, which is an end to sanctions. Whether or not this was actually like nefarious communication was never proved in the Mueller investigation, because what Weissman says is that they knew that the president could not have his day in court, and you cannot impugn someone that you will not give their day in court. So they didn't, which is exactly what James Comey did, right? He talked about Hillary Clinton like she did bad things, but not bad enough. So that's the end of the email scandal investigation, which most people think was extremely unethical because he impugned her without giving her the right to defend herself. And so this is why Mueller would not name Trump in any kind of crimes, because he knew the president could not be tried fairly in court, right? But there was plenty of smoke there. So, you know, a lot of it did seem to indicate that the Trump organization just didn't know what was and was not allowed. So they were talking to Russians as if, oh, really, you can do that? I mean, it was just kind of like the Trump children, like, sure, I'll take a look at that. Not really knowing, because they weren't political players
right
before that. And then it just got worse and worse because they didn't know any better. But at the same time, they know now. Why will they open themselves up to this investigation?
I don't know. I mean, to me, this is not, I know the mainstream media, I saw an article, a couple articles. They're like, they immediately had like holes shot in this, you know, they're like, it was some Associated Press piece or whatever. And they were like, you know, we brought in legal minds and they shot holes in this thing. It's a laughable lawsuit. It's like, okay, he was the president of the United States. He's filing a lawsuit against Hillary Clinton, among other people, for, among other things, collusion, fraud. The list is endless in this lawsuit.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's 16 different counts that they specifically lay out here in this. So you don't just do that. I mean,
well, that this is so interesting, right? Because the Mueller investigation, they refused to say exactly what the president had done wrong, but they had plenty that he lays out in the book that they thought were like, this is probably something, but because the president cannot be tried while he's in office, we can't impugn him, right? So then why now is the president choosing to be tried? This is, it doesn't make a lot of sense as a political move. It doesn't seem like something we should just throw away. And it does seem like we will at least, at the very least, we're going to get interesting defenses that are not coordinated from Democratic named defendants.
Well, okay, and I guess because Trump's big thing is he believes there's no such thing as bad press, so he doesn't, you know, he's going to be out there in a big way.
I think that's overly simplistic for something that's 108.
Well, that's Trump.
But he paid for this legal document, which is inflammatory, and I don't know. I feel like that.
Maybe it's
answer.
Him setting himself up for the next run in 2024. And this is like a precursor
but
to
I
that.
I don't think he needs it. I think that the people who would vote for him don't care about Russian collusion anymore.
Absolutely. That's the case. I don't think so.
Even
at all.
In this sort so of appetite here. For Russian vengeance.
The reason I think we wanted to do this story is because I don't believe the mainstream media argument on this, that this is just a laughable lawsuit and it's got tons of holes in it. Like, that's, you know, mainstream media aside, there's something here. Like, there's something bigger. And I think the Trump administration, or I think the Trump team Trump wants to get access through discovery to what the Democrats are hiding, mm-hmm. what they have access to. What do those emails say? What were they colluding about? In the same way that they've gone after him for so many years.
Yeah.
We'll see. Let us know your thoughts.
I don't know. I don't understand it, but I also don't want to throw it in the trash either. I want to watch it. All of us.
Well, I think that there's Trump, you know, he's the arrogance and confidence. And it's a lot of times his arrogance gets him in trouble. So he's probably arrogantly confident that he is going to come out clean on this, which he might not. But he's got so many people around him that are obviously telling him to go forward with it.
Yeah, apparently. Well, somebody else who shows a lot of confidence and who's also incredibly arrogant is Senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, who, you know, blows whichever way the political winds go. He goes with whatever way the political winds go at any given time. And over the past few weeks, he's been calling for publicly the assassination of Vladimir Putin, that the United States should sanction that and go forward with that. Meanwhile, members of his own party are saying that that's freaking crazy. Like, you're calling for the assassination of a foreign leader. Okay. Really? You're going to do that? Well, he doubled down on it once again just yesterday, that the only way that this ends is what he called a decapitation, basically stopping Vladimir Putin with an assassination.
Wait a minute.
The United States should,
I figured it out. I figured it out. He's the one doing the Zoom meetings. These are paid people over there going to assassinate Putin.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's these Zoom meetings we were talking about earlier is, you know, the interviews that they're doing for these Americans who want to go and fight in Ukraine. And they're like jumping on Zoom interviews to decide whether or not they're good enough to go, which I don't, I'd love to know who's holding these Zoom interviews. Maybe it is Lindsey Graham after all, but he continues to push and double down on this idea of going and assassinating Vladimir Putin. Well, Rob O'Neill knows something about this. Rob O'Neill, of course, a member of SEAL Team 6. He was the man who shot and killed Osama bin Laden in that nighttime raid, which took him out. I know Rob. I've interviewed Rob many, many times. He's not one to BS anything. So he was asked flat out, like, what do you think of Lindsey Graham on this assassination? And he had this to say about Lindsey Graham's plan to assassinate Vladimir Putin.
Your opinion, if the U.S., do we have the capability to send guys into Moscow and take out a guy as heavily guarded as Putin?
That's a pipe dream that guys like Lindsey Graham like to put on makeup and smile and get ratings on different news channels. That's it. Ouch. As a sitting senator, you don't say that on live television. As other sitting senators say nuclear war, you don't say that on television. They're in fantasy world. As a senator, maybe, like I was saying, he could talk to some of his counterparts and do a Vladimir Putin poison your enemy type thing, but you don't say it on TV. That's ridiculous. Right. As far as sending dudes in, you know, this a lot of these people that are out there that are really, really good at Call of Duty, and then they go over to Ukraine because they're calling for them, they're finding out a harsh reality when they get there. So the way you decapitate someone like Putin is you got to hit him with airstrikes. Just because, again, you know, I mean, okay, they don't fight as well as we thought, but again, you know, the Kremlin is not a three-story house in Abbottabad, Pakistan either. And right. At the dead of the night, and they have radar, they have technology. I just disagree with the way they fight because they take the easy way because they don't really care. They're not the good guys. They don't give a shit if they kill the wrong people.
Well, it's funny you brought up Call.
All right, so let's take that as a collective lesson to not talk about what the heck we don't understand.
Right. So he's saying, and he's also, Rob O'Neill's basically talking about a bunch of these soldiers, these guys who just like are jumping on a, you know, in a truck and driving across Polish border into Ukraine to fight and pick up arms and realize like, whoa, they're in way over their heads. You're fighting the Russian army. You don't know what the heck you're doing. Like you're doing this, like, okay, you can play Call of Duty. You probably can't fight the Russian army. I'm just going to say you probably don't understand maneuvers. You don't understand half the stuff you're getting involved with. But also, Lindsey Graham, thanks for putting on makeup and going on television and telling us why we should go and assassinate a foreign leader. Like, you don't know what you're talking about.
I'm wearing makeup on television right now, but I'm not saying anything like that.
Yeah, smart.
Well, that guy's speech
was still
very... I don't
think there's anything wrong with the makeup, you know. That's fine.
That interview was still very pro-war.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, he was, of course. He's a Navy SEAL.
Yeah,
like, you know, absolutely would love to be the one to go over and do that.
All right, well, we're going to move on to what's trending after Clayton tells you about our last show sponsor, and then we have pet photos. So we're going to end this week with pets and puppies.
That's right. All right, I want to tell you about our friends over at ScoreMaster. They have a 3-week rule, which is a really smart idea, which may be the best financial advice you'll ever have. What's the 3-week rule? Wait 3 weeks to buy that new car. Wait 3 weeks to refinance your mortgage. Wait 3 weeks to finance any major purchase. Why 3 weeks? Because that's how fast the average ScoreMaster user takes to boost his or her credit score, an average of 61 points. And listen, 61 points added to your credit score can save you tens of thousands in everything we finance, right? ScoreMaster technology was developed by credit data scientists to boost your credit score higher and faster than you even thought possible. ScoreMaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started, and you don't have to wait months for your best credit score. Try ScoreMaster for free and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/invest today. That's scoremaster.com/invest. Again, scoremaster.com/invest to fix your credit score today. Our thanks to Scoremaster. All right, what is trending on the internet?
All right, here are a few trending topics of interest for you that I have picked out that you might like to know about. Jeff Fortenberry is trending. He is a representative from Nebraska who was convicted of lying to authorities about an illegal campaign contribution in the amount of $30,000. He is currently seeking re-election. He will not be sentenced until June, so it remains to be seen whether he can serve a new term if he is re-elected or if he even continues to run.
Yeah, he could serve up to 5 years in prison. So good thing he's trying to run for re-election. But, you know, crooked politicians, they get re-elected all the time. So
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jenny Thomas is trending. She's the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Text messages between her and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows were released, showing that she was urging Meadows to press on with overturning the results of the 2020 presidential election in favor of former President Trump. These texts were submitted to the January 6th committee by Mark Meadows himself.
Which raises a lot of questions, right? Like, I mean, should he when they were asked then to follow up on the documents, right? And the Supreme Court was asked to weigh in on that about the documents for the January 6th committee.
Yes.
Why? And Clarence Thomas was the only person who voted against that.
Interesting. Possibly related.
Like, right? Like,
highly likely.
Oh, wait. My wife was sending tons of text messages to the chief of staff.
So I don't want that out.
Calling on him to overturn the election. And my husband is on the Supreme Court. And he's the one vote that said no. Like, so first of all, number one, shouldn't he have recused himself from that vote?
If he knew about said texts, yes.
Okay.
We don't know for sure he
was trying to protect his wife? I mean, he should have. He was the lone dissenting voice on this like decision about.
Does anyone know who owns or who's in possession of that heart attack gun?
The heart attack gun?
Yeah, remember when we covered that weapon that can give you a heart attack?
Right.
That's like in the Pelican Brief.
Yeah.
That's a everything you're talking about, you guys, is like a plot of a fictional story.
Or true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, hashtag AtlantaFX is trending because the hit show starring Donald Glover has returned for its long-awaited fourth season. Do you have a... Nope, that's not it. There, I just saw a picture of him. We did want to show you a picture of him, but I don't see it now.
I don't see it.
Okay, well, you know what he looks like. The show was off the air for 4 years due to COVID, so it now is able to film and people are excited about it.
That makes no sense to me, by the way. I saw that. I was like, why? They were on a hiatus for 4 years because of COVID?
Yeah, you're right, because so many Hollywood studios got special permission to flaunt COVID restrictions that most small business owners had to adhere to. But maybe he wasn't one of them. I don't know.
Okay. But how is the 4 years? That go that predates the pandemic.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand on top of
maybe they had intended to start shooting in 2020 and then just kept being pushed off, right?
Got
so that the first 2 years maybe were planned hiatus and then they just had to keep pushing it. I don't know. Venus and Serena Williams are both trending after it was announced that they will present at the Oscars this weekend. By the way, the Oscars are this weekend. And they are attending all kinds of pre-Oscar parties looking fabulous. And I only mention this because I like to see what the Williams sisters wear. I think they're very fashionable.
So the Oscars, interesting discussion about the Oscars. We don't have to get derailed by it. But like there's 8 categories that they're not going to air. Like there's makeup and hair category that they're not going to do this time. I think it's hair and makeup. They're not going to show off a couple of different categories. And so there's like speculation that when they win their statue, if you win a statue, people might hold it upside down.
In order to support hair and makeup people?
Yeah, in order to protest the fact that these categories are not being featured during the live show. So this is going to be their protest, is holding the statue
upside
down.
Seriously, who gives
down.
A F
they're also,
about this
There's
cause.
Also discussions that Zelensky is going to be doing a Zoom speech during the Oscars. They're still, the Academy Awards are still, haven't ruled on that yet. Initially, they said they might not do it. So Vladimir Zelensky could be appearing during the Oscar ceremony.
But there's a whole lot of categories that don't make it into the main televised ceremony.
Yeah.
So why do we care about these now? And okay. Yeah. There's like a whole you know, they usually do this, like, this is a pre-Oscar show that we did for like
last night.
South American movies that you guys don't get to watch. So we did it yesterday. Well, here's like a little clip.
String two cinematographers and so forth.
Go ahead, probably don't like have the full, like, we'll never know the full story. Like, there's probably so much back channel politics going on that there's more to the story than we'll ever know because we're not in Hollywood. So it could be something like that, you know, where it's, you never know where something like this stems from.
Yeah. All right. I don't have time for that kind of cause. So, all right. This one set my hair on fire. I'm going to end on this one. Male contraceptive pill is trending. I'm going to have to take it down an octave. New research shows that a birth control pill for men, that is the what do we call it? The chemical structure of it. Yeah. This is new research showing that a birth control pill for men was effective 99% of the time in mice, and human trials could start in 2022. There's an article that you can, I'm not sure which, yes, that one. Now, this is a non-hormonal pill, you guys, unlike hormonal pills, because the hormonal pills for men cause side effects, including weight gain, depression, and increased cholesterol. So scientists are trying to find a non-hormonal option for men. Because men can't have these side effects when it comes to birth control, but women don't have a non-hormonal option. So I can't take it. Okay, female hormonal birth control has all kinds of negative side effects, known side effects, right? Blood clotting being one of them, more incidence of that than in a COVID vaccine. And yet there is no non-hormonal birth control option for women. But because men might get a little depressed and retain a little weight, we can't let them take a hormonal contraceptive. No, no side effects for you, you guys.
Is it possible that the hormonal reaction isn't coming from the pills?
No, probably not.
I'm just kidding.
and by the way, I do not take a hormonal-based birth control any longer, especially as I got older.
She doesn't need any extra hormones.
Because it's some pretty dangerous stuff, you guys. And I also don't use an IUD, which is also hormone-based, which causes inflammation of the uterus on purpose so that sperm cannot penetrate the uterus. So when they tell us that inflammation is the root of all disease, right? Why do we let women keep their uterus in a constant state of inflammation? Because we don't give an F about what happens to women's bodies as long as the end goal is birth control that suits everyone, right? But no, let's go out of our way to make a non-hormonal pill for men, even though women have been suffering from hormonal pills and hormonal birth control forever.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I mean, maybe that's just modern medicine, you know?
Then where is it for women?
Well, that's maybe, modern medicine. That's the medicine we've been running forever. It's sort of like the male-dominated medicine.
Maybe they have to make the men version first and then dilute it a little for women because they can't give them the same dose. Like,
I don't think it works like that.
Oh.
But you can try it and let me know. I mean, look, after I had my second child, I went to look for all kinds of non-hormonal contraceptive because I thought that I was pretty much done. Then we went on to have one more baby. But there just is a lack of good options for women who don't want to just have their whole life getting pregnant over and over again. And it's really upsetting that there is like, men, the weight gain and depression and increase, I think it's your turn. Go suffer the side effects of male birth control, hormonal birth control. And then you take a turn because it's terrible. So, okay. Oh, okay. Can't hand that. A little bit of depression. Hey, your feelings get hurt. Let's get you a different kind of pill. We don't get one, but
nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Judge. Exactly. She took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. I can't take it. All right. I'm ending on that. That's all I got.
On that positive note,
anything, you guys? You want to have a little awakening under your belly button? See if you like that, a little cramping?
I don't need birth control. I'm not in the market for birth control, so.
I'm all for it.
I went the permanent route about 10 years ago, so.
That's the route we use too.
Yep. Yeah. Oh yeah, I had my balls put in a mason jar many years ago. Many years ago.
I don't think you got the proper procedure. I was talking about the vas deferens, not the.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you might have got duped. How's your singing voice though? Singing a lot of Castrati lately.
I'm in a band called the Eunuchs. Yeah. Thank you guys for a wonderful show today. Thank you guys for dialing us up, making us a part of your week. Please subscribe to the channel. If you're not already subscribed, just hit that little subscribe button. Turn on the bell notifications. We do this show live every week. And you can become a channel member and support independent journalism for just the price of a cup of coffee once a month. You can do that by going to morninginvest.com/join. YouTube gets their 30%. So, you know, it's not very much. But anyway, you can support our show by going to morninginvest.com/join to become a channel member. You can participate in our chat here during the show. And yeah. All of that. So thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.